Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Empowering Family Caregiver Show on Blog Talk Radio. I am Polly Whitehorn, your host for today's show, sponsored by eCareDiary.com. Today's show will address the topic of dementia behaviors and resources to assist caregivers. I am very pleased to introduce our distinguished guest, Danita Vetter. Danita is the Aging Programs Coordinator at the Waccamaw Area Agency on Aging, which I believe is in North Carolina, and it oversees the Regional County Office on Aging. She is the co-founder of SAGES, which is an acronym for Senior Advocates Growing Elder Services. Previously, she was the Vice President for the Alzheimer's Association Delaware Valley Chapter in Philadelphia, managing a professional staff and volunteers that delivered education and support programs along with services to people with cognitive impairment, as well as family members and professional caregivers. Well, Danita, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Polly.
Well, I'm just delighted to have you with us. I have just a whole load of questions here that I want to pose to you because I know you have so much information and I can't wait to learn about what you can share. First of all, I guess the first thing I would love to know is how you came to work in this field. Is there a personal story that brought you to this professional road, working with persons and their family members who have cognitive disabilities?
Yes, Polly. When 27 years ago, I was a young person coming out of graduate school, and I was so interested throughout my undergrad and grad career in serving older people, and that was sort of unusual because I was a young person myself. I never really had a personal story until after I got my first position starting up adult daycare in Princeton, New Jersey. And then both of my grandmothers got Alzheimer's disease. And I learned not only from the academic perspective about Alzheimer's disease, but I learned personally what that means to a family. And that really helped me in my career to serve others who were walking that journey.
Oh, thank you for sharing that with us. Now, people with cognitive disabilities, they act in different and unpredictable ways. What does the behavior say about what is going on inside the head of the person with dementia?
Well, Polly, that is really a real hallmark of the disease, the fact that a person really changes on the most basic levels in the way they think and the way they act and the way they function because of Alzheimer's disease. It is really a function of changes that happen on the cellular level of the brain. And it's really hard to tell when someone has cancer, we can see that they've lost their hair, or if someone, has had another type of a disability and they've lost their arm or their leg. It's so easy for us to see. But we really have to look at the way a person behaves to understand that they have something going wrong in their brain. And in terms of Alzheimer's disease, that means that sticky gummy protein-type plaques are growing between the brain cells and causing them to break down because they're not able to exchange oxygen and carbon dioxide, because they're not able to take in the sugars that we eat in food. The basic cell structure changes so that the inside of the cell gets tangled up and the outside of it gets clogged with plaques, neuritic plaques. And those two issues cause a person to lose their ability to think, to reason, and to function as they normally do. So it's all about the cells in the brain and the changes that happen there.
Mm-hmm. Now, it's interesting because it's so individual. The behaviors are so different from one patient to the next. Can you give us a little bit of information about why that is?
Yeah, I think I can. Well, first of all, we're all very different from one another. We have a lot of similarities, but we bring different genetic features, and we bring different histories and experiences to ourselves in later life. So we're all different to begin with. So there are going to be differences across the board, but the brain is the mainframe computer of the entire body. I mean, we see the world around us with our eyes, but what we see is taken in and is reflected back into our brain, and then we interpret the world through our brain and whatnot. So the brain is made up of so many specialized functions. Every one of our senses, our ability to remember, our personality, how we act in the world, how we move through the world, all of it has to do with our brain. So we never know with people what parts of their brain will be more affected than others. And basically the plaques and the tangles that we talked about a little bit earlier on the cellular level of the brain start on in the outside layer of the cortex. And in the early stages, people will be just like you and I, forget where they put their keys or how to operate a simple machine that they've used all their life. But it progresses from there. So people are different because the plaques, the rate of the plaques and tangles that build up in their brain build up in different places. So it is very, very individual what happens to people with Alzheimer's disease, and yet there is a bit of a hierarchy that people go through the stages of Alzheimer's disease, early, mid, and late stages. There are guideposts for that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So behavior is individual.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, of course, it's so hard for the caregiver to watch what's going on, and it's so hard for them to understand these behaviors. What tools can a caregiver use to help them understand the behavior and their causes?
Well, I think that we first have to understand that watching your loved one go through Alzheimer's disease or going through Alzheimer's disease yourself is such a grief process. People are really grieving for the losses that they're noticing. Often it's quite a shock to find out that the diagnosis itself is really quite shocking to the family and really sort of numbs them up a little bit for a while and makes it hard for them to ask questions of their doctor or to find help because they just cannot believe that this has happened to them. But the most important thing that family members can do, and this is the easy part for them, is they know that person better than anybody else. And they know their likes and their dislikes, and they know their idiosyncrasies. So they have a lot of information about a person as they begin the process, the disease process, that will be very, very useful to them. Lots of times people who have a cognitive impairment, they have triggers. And triggers are things that really we all have, things that upset us, that make us angry, that throw us off balance, that make us have a bad day. Well, people with dementia are the same as you and I. They have these triggers too. And for caregivers, it's knowing what the person's triggers are and trying to avoid them the very best they can. And then conversely, knowing what that person really loves, what they've done as a career, what they do for fun, what makes them laugh, what distracts them. And knowing these things is really, really important on a personal level for those who are caring for someone with Alzheimer's disease, because we can avoid the bad parts by not going there, and we can stimulate the fun, happy parts of life by making those opportunities more available. And then caregivers, the family can do best by sharing that information with the professional caregiver as well. So those are really big tools to have in your toolbox. Knowing that person and knowing what they dislike and what they like. Super, super important to the best comfortable basic care of someone with the Alzheimer's disease or dementia.
That's great. Knowing their likes and dislikes. Are there any specific practical tips beyond, you know, knowing what their likes and dislikes are and what makes them smile or happy? Are there any other practical tips that you can share with our audience?
There are. I think one of the most important things to remember is that you have to remain as a caregiver as flexible and as patient and as calm as you can, no matter what is happening right in front of you in terms of your loved one exhibiting some behavior that is not how they would normally act. So a lot of the responsibility for what goes on in that relationship is no longer a 50-50 kind of a give or take. When someone gets Alzheimer's disease or another type of cognitive impairment, really the burden of that relationship in terms of keeping things on an even keel begins to shift over to the caregiver. And so remembering that you are the one that can still think rationally and choose not to go to a place that is angry or upset or anxious is really, really important, to know that you're the one who will set the tone for that interaction now, and that the person who has the cognitive impairment may no longer demonstrate the ability to take on that responsibility anymore. So I think that that's really, really key to understanding the changing dynamics of that relationship. Another tip I would say is someone who has Alzheimer's disease, they may do some things that really push your buttons and drive you crazy in terms of behavior. And let me just give a few sort of common examples. One would be repeating the same things over and over and over again. Of course, that's pretty annoying to all of us. We're only human, right? First of all, let's admit we're only human, and that can be very annoying. But that using that as an example, you would want to try to respond to the behavior, not to the behavior, but to the emotion behind the behavior. Because if a person is sort of fixated on one thing and asking a question over and over again, maybe it's, can I go home now? Can we go home now? Can we go home now? Try to figure out what it is about that, what a person is saying when they're asking to go home. They may not actually be physically saying, get me in the car and take me home. They might be saying, I don't feel the way I used to feel. I don't feel at all like myself. I'm not at peace with this. I don't feel at home anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that would be thinking about what they're doing in terms of their emotion rather than their behavior. Mm-hmm. And so we have to see what are they trying to tell us by the way they're acting. And it takes a little bit of changing your mindset about some things. So looking for the emotion.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Looking for the emotion behind the behavior instead of just critiquing the behavior that's going on, I think is real important.
Communication is certainly, it's a really hard and key issue for caregivers who have to deal with erratic behavior from loved ones with dementia. What tips do you have that would help enhance that communication?
Okay, well, first of all, I think that it's very important for the caregiver to understand that many times early on in the disease, the way a person processes their thought and then speaks, or the way a person hears what's being said and interprets it, is changing because those parts of the brain are being affected by the plaques and the tangles that we talked about earlier. So that I think it's important for the caregiver to understand that the behavior that a person is demonstrating is really what they're trying to communicate to you. It may not be through words anymore that they communicate primarily, but it may be through their behavior. So that communication is not so much I listen to you, Pauly, and then I respond to you, and you listen back, and you respond. That's the way we think about communication right now. But with someone with Alzheimer's disease, the way they're acting is what they're trying to communicate to you. So if we see a person sort of walking aimlessly around a room and going from thing to thing, and, you know, sort of not, it doesn't make any sense, the first thing I would be thinking about in terms of that behavior is they're looking for something, they need something, and I would start going down the list of things that they might need. And I would think first, do they need to go to the bathroom? Very basic, elementary kind of a need. It does create some anxiety, the sensation of it. We all start looking for the bathroom when we have to go, but you and I can find the bathroom. So people with dementia may not be able to. So their behavior is actually saying to you, gee, I need to go to the bathroom. Maybe you can help me get there. Same thing with getting a drink. People with dementia may be looking for some water, something to drink. They forget to drink, and they forget how to go through all the steps of opening the faucet, getting the glass, raising it to their lips, those sorts of things. So we want to think about behavior in terms of what might their physical needs be. Are they hungry? Are they thirsty? Do they need to go to the bathroom? Is it too hot in here? Is it too cold in here? So when we watch a person behave, we want to think first physically, you know, are they okay, when you're trying to figure out what it is they need, because their behavior is actually their form of communication to you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Real important for us to remember.
Yeah, yeah. Now, because the behaviors are so many and varied, is there one behavior that is considered the most dangerous?
Yes, there is, Pauly, and because it's pretty common, it's wandering. People who have cognitive impairment, more than 60% of them will wander, which means they will get up and leave wherever they are without any warning and be gone and possibly not be able to find their way back again. And wandering is the most dangerous behavior that a person with Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia can engage themselves in, because so many things can happen to them when they wander. I, for many years, worked in the Safe Return Program for the Alzheimer's Association, and we carried a beeper, and so I had the opportunity to interact with families who had lost their loved one because of wandering at any time of the day or night, in all kinds of weather, on holidays, you know, it didn't matter when, but they got themselves into lots and lots of trouble when they did it. Sometimes folks would get themselves out into traffic and not know how to cross the street. Sometimes they would wander into bad neighborhoods and get in trouble with, unsavory characters. Sometimes they would crawl into overheated cars in the summer to rest and lay down and succumb to heat stroke. Sometimes they'd fall in the snow and not be able to get up. And I mean, there are just so many things that a person can get into when they wander. So it is considered the most dangerous behavior. And should someone wander from their home, after a 24-hour period, they only have a 50% chance of survival. It really is that critical. So I like to tell folks who are providing care to take precautions in terms of wandering. I can't tell you the number of times I heard someone say, but my loved one's never done that before. Well, they might not have, but there really is no flashing, red flashing light that says, I'm about to wander, I'm about to wander. Mm-hmm. And once a person does it, they're much more likely to do it again. So taking precautions around the home against wandering is very important, especially when you're sleeping or you're in the shower. It can happen in an instant. It can happen to the very best caregivers. It happens in nursing homes and assisted livings and daycares. It happens just about everywhere. So I suggest folks get involved with the Safe Return Program from the Alzheimer's Association. And there are some other more high-tech things they have now, like wander guards and those sort of things, sort of like LoJack for people. But I suggest that people take precaution against that particular behavior because it is so, so dangerous.
Very valuable information. Now, where can a caregiver go to receive assistance any time of the day or night?
Well, I am so excited to be able to say this. I've said it a million times, and it still gives me great joy to say that there is an 800 number that the Alzheimer's Association has that's available any time of the day or night for someone who is caring for a person with Alzheimer's disease or a related dementia, or for the person who is has the disease themselves. And that number is 1-800-272-3900. It's called the 24/7/365 Alzheimer's Disease Helpline. And there are people like me who have, you know, studied Alzheimer's disease and worked with people who have Alzheimer's disease waiting for your call, even if it's Christmas Eve, even if it's a stroke of midnight on New Year's, even if it's Sunday morning at 4:30 in the morning. They will take any question from you, anything from, I'm so depressed that this is happening to me, to my loved one just wandered away, to how can I engage my family, where do I find a support group, any question that you have about Alzheimer's disease. If they don't know the answer, and none of us know all the answers, they will find that answer for you. So I suggest that folks keep that number with them. If you have a loved one with Alzheimer's disease, I say put it on your refrigerator, put it by your phone, take it in your wallet or your purse. 1-800-272-3900, day or night, people there to help you.
Thank you. I'm so glad you you gave the number to our listeners one more time. That's great. Are there any resources for caregivers to coordinate care for their loved ones with dementia remotely?
Well, I would say that number is one way to go about doing that. When you call that 800 number during the day, you get your local Alzheimer's Association chapter. And when you call it after business hours on a weekday or on the weekends or a holiday, when the office locally would normally be closed, you get the National Alzheimer's Association in Chicago. They have a phone bank set up there. So that's how they work it out. Those two entities, your local Alzheimer's Association and the National Association, are there for you 24 hours a day. I was working for the Alzheimer's Association for many, many years before I moved to South Carolina, but now I work for the Area Agency on Aging, and every state has a number of area agencies on aging across the state. And those area agencies on aging are generally weekday operations from 9 to 5. But we are also here available to talk with people who have dementia or people who are providing care to those with dementia. And we would be willing to help you find local resources such as adult day, personal care, hospice care for those in the late stages. There's a myriad of services now, and we can help you find local services, because no family caregiver can care for someone with dementia alone 24 hours a day. Smart and savvy caregivers put together a care plan that includes professionals as well. because Alzheimer's disease and dementia can be bigger than any one caregiver or any one family. Mm-hmm. So put a team behind you. And let us help you do that with the Alzheimer's Association and the area agencies on aging across the country.
Well, we have a few minutes left, and I have one question that I'd love to run past you. Are there any avenues of financial aid for caregivers or seniors involved in dementia care?
Well, yes, there are, but in my experience, it is rather limited and would vary from location to location across the country. So let me first start with what would be a federal and a state level program that there is a family caregiver support program, and it is a federal program, and that money comes from the Federal Bureau of Aging Services, and it's sent, the money is sent then to the state offices on aging. And then it's broken down into regions. So it's a federal program. It's matched by state money, and then it's sent out to your local regions. And that is money that's set aside not for the person who has the disease, but for the caregiver. And it would allow a small stipend annually to the caregiver to be spent in any way that they would like to spend that money, in terms of taking care of their loved ones. Obviously, there are some income guidelines.
Hello? Danita?
Honey, it can be $500 for a caregiver who's going through their area agency on aging. Sometimes your local Alzheimer's Association has some matching money for that, and they might get that up to about $1,000. You can see that that's not a lot of money. And Alzheimer's disease, super expensive to take care of. So there may be some local foundations that might help you. The way adult day and in-home care is financed across the country is different from state to state and locale to locale. So you'd want to check with your area agency on aging and let them know that you are caring for someone with Alzheimer's disease, and you'd like to know what would be available locally as well.
That's great. That's great.
Well, mm-hmm.
I just wanted to say thank you so much. This, you've just shared so much so many valuable bits of information with our audience today, and I just wanted to say thank you so much for being our guest. And our audience can learn more about Danita Vetter by visiting this website, www.wrcog.org/area-agency-on-aging/. I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in today. Join us next time on Tuesday, March the 12th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for our live online support group created by and for caregivers and moderated by Marjorie Pabst, eCare Diaries caregiving expert. Heidi Eisenhart, shareholder at Sheffield, Lohman, and Wilson, practicing in the areas of elder law, estate planning, and trust administration, will speak about why caregivers should think about their caregiving plans much like they do about their wills and trusts. To learn more about eCare Diary and our upcoming shows, please visit www.ecarediary.com. Registration is free and gives you immediate access to your personal care diary tool. You can find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. My Twitter address is ecare_diary. Thank you very much again for joining us. Bye now.